Hit them both.
There you go.
Ice water in his veins. KU goes up 4. Tech gets it in. Isaac's a desperation 3. No good. And KU will win it for an astounding 17th time in 20 seasons under Bill Self. Your Jayhawks are Big 12 champions. And for the 40th consecutive year, KU sends its seniors out in style.
And the Jayhawks do clinch at least a share of the Big 12 title. The 40th straight senior night win for the Jayhawks. They beat Texas Tech 67-63. Wasn't easy. They led by 9 at halftime, ugly first half. Kevin McCullough made the play of the game where he just willed himself to get a loose ball and get a layup against his former team. And those are the types of plays that make the difference between winning and losing. And McCullough seems to make those plays, as does DeJuan Harris. Harris with a layup with 10 seconds to go. And then after a three-pointer on Texas Tech, Grady Dick, who had a tough night shooting the basketball, hit 2 clutch free throws to seal it with 3 seconds remaining. And senior night, Jalen Wilson at 21, McCullough at 14. They were the two that gave their speeches. DeJuan Harris added 16. KU still undefeated when Harris scores 4 or more points. Here's Bill Self on another Big 12 championship.
It's been great, you know, and you know, nobody can take away that this has been a good year. If it ended now, it's a good year. But in order to be great years or special years, you got to do good in the postseason. So, you know, we still got a lot of work ahead of us.
That sounds like a guy that's not satisfied. And why would he be? He's won 2 national championships, been to multiple Final Fours. It's like, ho-hum, won a conference title. This is nice and everything, but we want more. Why wouldn't you? You're the defending national champion, and I never thought that Kansas would be in a position where they could possibly be the number one overall seed, losing 2 first-round draft picks and losing David McCormick, and looking at what Kansas brought back. I obviously like Harris. Wilson, you knew, needed to take another step, and you kind of figured he would because Bill Self has a history with his players where, hey, it's your year. It's like Ochai last year. I remember Tyshawn Taylor stepped it up his final year, Thomas Robinson. I mean, when they need guys, McCormick stepped up last year big when they needed it, big time in the tournament. It just seems like when they need guys to elevate their game and be the man, those guys slide right into those roles, work hard during the offseason, improve their draft stock, and then, of course, having McDonald's All-American Grady Dick helps. And then you get, as I said, the final piece of the puzzle was Kevin McCullough transferring from Texas Tech to Kansas. And he is a glue player. He's so, so important to this team. And he doesn't get enough credit outside of the University of Kansas, in my opinion. And there's even some KU fans that, you know, only know of points. You know, they only know of points. That's how they judge players. There's much more to basketball than just points. There's lots of different things. Defense, rebounding, assists, steals, you know, heady plays, hustle plays, getting on the floor, sometimes fouling a guy so he doesn't get an easy layup, and that doesn't show up in the box score other than it's a foul. Deflections, that's another one that you might not get credit for a steal. I think more teams should chart deflections. I know that college teams do and pro teams do. I think high school teams, if they want, they could maybe create another category. I don't know if it's, you know, some of the stat programs, maybe they don't have deflections, but if there's stat programs out there and you have one that you run, add deflections, because that's a very important stat. That shows how active your defense typically is. So it was, nice. It wasn't super great, Kansas. They squeaked by again. You look at Kansas's schedule, a lot of close wins this year, especially at home, which is interesting. But when they, once again, this is why Kansas can win it all. And I never thought I would say this before the year. I thought this is a team that, you know, if things clicked right, they might be able to make a Final Four, maybe. Elite Eight is what I was thinking. And I thought they'd be near the top of the Big 12. Don't get me wrong. Toughest year the Big 12 maybe has ever seen. Kansas has got at least a share. And if Texas loses at TCU tonight, which that game is on ESPN2 at 8, if Texas loses tonight to TCU, then Kansas already has an outright championship no matter what happens Saturday in Austin when KU plays Texas at 3 o'clock on Z96.3 the Lake. So, I mean, they just have the right chemistry. They got the right pieces. Bill Self coaches them up. And they can win games in the 80s. They scored 88 against Texas, and Jalen Wilson scored 2 points. They scored 87 against Baylor, and they won at home. They've beaten TCU 63-58. They played a grinder again last night and beat Texas Tech 67-63. They can beat you in high-scoring games. They can beat you in grinders. They can play up-tempo. They can play half-court, although there are times they struggle offensively half-court play, and they did some last night. They are a decent three-point shooting team. I wouldn't say they're great, but they're decent. Obviously, the thing that stands out is they don't have a true five, but Uday's come around and played fairly well. KJ Adams plays taller than his stature. And I would have never dreamt before the season that I would be saying KU might be the number one overall seed, and that KU will win the Big 12 title by possibly two games outright, and that KU is a absolute, maybe the favorite to win another title going back to back. I just, there's no way you would have seen that coming because of everything they lost and then the unknown. I mean, I think a lot of people didn't think Grady Dick would be this good right away. I know I didn't. Somebody told me there's a mock draft out there that has Grady Dick in the top 10 in the draft.
Oh, yeah. He's gone.
That's insane. I mean, like I told my oldest son.
I don't
think
anybody expected him to be there for 1 year either.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I'm saying.
This good right away and then just, okay, see you later after 1 year.
Yeah. And I was talking to my oldest son last night about this on the couch after the high school game, and we were watching the end of the KU game, and I said, I wonder if Grady's struggling so much tonight because he thinks it's his last game as a Jayhawk at Allen Fieldhouse. And my son said, what? And I said, hey, buddy, Grady Dick is a projected lottery pick right now. Jalen Wilson's like late first round. And he said, that's crazy. Wilson's a better player than Grady Dick. I said, it has nothing to do with it, son. Has nothing to do with it. Grady Dick is 18, 19 years old. He's 6'7", 6'8". He can get his shot. It's all about potential. Jalen Wilson doesn't play above the rim. He hasn't had a dunk in his career. Grady Dick can play above the rim on alley-oops. He doesn't just shoot three-pointers. Now, Grady Dick's got to improve defensively, no question. Although the way the NBA is, you don't have to play a lot of great defense in the regular season, as we've seen. So, and you're not playing the stars half the time because they don't play. So Grady Dick, he'd be crazy to come back to KU if he's going to be a top 10 pick. One draft has him number six. I mean, you'd be crazy to come back. That's guaranteed money. And you can get better. I always love the argument, well, you get better if you come back to college and practice every day. You're going to get more practices in the pros with men, and that'll actually force you to get better, or you are going to fall apart. It ain't about the – I don't think it's necessarily about the physical part. It's about the mental part. Can you handle the mental part of traveling a lot in the NBA? Can you, at 19 years of age, can you handle getting pounded in practice by bigger guys and athletic guys better than you to where you work and get better? And my oldest son doesn't think Grady Dick's going to be that good of a pro. He doesn't think Jalen Wilson's going to be that great of a pro. And I said, you know what? I didn't think Christian Brown would make the NBA. And here he is as a really good role player for the Denver Nuggets in his first year and probably have a larger role going forward. You know, I didn't think Ochai Agbaji, his freshman year, was going to be a first-round pick. So, but it isn't about what the kids do in college. It isn't about stats in college. People need to understand this. Jarrett Allen averaged like 2 or 3 points a game at Texas, and then he was an all-star last year with the Nets. I mean, this is, you know, Frank Mason was college player of the year, and he was a second-round draft pick, and is not with an NBA team right now. Okay, it's about potential. Yeah, why do you think they get these guys that are 15, 16 years, 17 years old from overseas, stash them on their roster, hold them over there for a couple of years, they get better, develop, and then they bring them over? Those guys didn't play college in the United States. How do we know anything about them? Well, yeah, we don't know anything about them, but they play against grown men over there all the time. I mean, that's how Luka got to be so good. That's how Dirk Nowitzki got to be so good. Manu Ginobili got to be so good. I can go on and on. Tony Parker and others. For crying out loud, it's about potential. It is not about you're the national player of the year or, ooh, you're an All-American in college. The NBA doesn't care about it.
No.
And if they're smart, they shouldn't care about it. It's about potential. Grady Dick has more potential than Jalen Wilson in the NBA. Now, that doesn't mean that Jalen Wilson can't be a better pro. Doesn't mean Jalen Wilson won't be a better pro. Also doesn't mean that Grady Dick's going to be good in the NBA. Doesn't mean he's not going to be good in NBA. But the fact of the matter is, Grady Dick probably played his last game as a Jayhawk at Allen Fieldhouse, and right away it was like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I think that might be it. You know, that might be why he's struggling. He's a little bit like, oh, this is he knows deep down what he's going to probably do already. He might not know for sure, but I think there's a good possibility he knows. And I think all the people around him, they're smart people. His parents are smart. They're saying, listen, Grady, if you are a top 10 pick, I know you love college. It'd be great if you come back, but how can you possibly turn down guaranteed money? You come, and it's so easy for somebody sitting in Downs, Kansas, or Osborne, Kansas, or Beloit or Glen Elder, Kansas, to say, well, he should come back and help my KU team. That's so easy to say. Listen, if you had guaranteed money right now, if you were whatever job you were or in college right now, and you were guaranteed millions of dollars, all right, whether it's $1 million, $2 million, $4 million, okay, you're guaranteed a contract, you're guaranteed money in the millions, okay, $1 million, $2 million, $10 million, whatever, and you're currently making nothing because you're a college student, okay, maybe some NIL money, or you're working and making $40,000 at your job. Are you going to go back to your job if – I mean, maybe you will if you win the lottery for $2 million. Maybe you will go back to your job. A lot of people will say, yeah, you know, I'm going to take some time off, or I'm just going to be done, and I'll invest that money, and I can travel and do this or do that. Most people would leave their job for another job that pays them millions of dollars. And if you're sitting out there saying that you wouldn't, come on, stop it, okay? Odds are you would. Now, it might depend on where you would be. I get that a little bit. But for people that don't – aren't tied to the situation to say, well, Grady Dick needs to come back. Yeah, you want him to come back not for Grady Dick's benefit, but for you as a KU fan's benefit, okay? And if you're a K-State fan saying Grady Dick needs to go pro, you're not saying that because you really want Grady Dick to be successful. You just don't want him to play for KU anymore. So Grady Dick and his family have to do what's best for them. And Grady Dick, if he is a lottery pick, he should go. Because here's the funny thing. Grady Dick comes back to KU. Okay, some of these KU fans, oh, yeah, Grady Dick's not ready for the NBA. He needs to come back. So Grady Dick comes back, and he plays not quite as good next year as a sophomore as he did his freshman year. You know where his draft stock goes? Down. Because, one, he's a year older, so one less year to develop him in the NBA. And, two, he didn't play as well. Okay? Now, could he elevate his stock? Yes, that's possible. Ochai Agbaji did it. He elevated his stock, but here's the thing. He went through the draft combines, and he knew he was not going to be a lottery pick. If you're not a lottery pick, then you probably should come back. If you're a late first-round pick, you have eligibility, you should probably come back. Jalen Wilson tested the NBA draft waters not once but twice, and both times came back. He made the right decision. He has improved. Now, if Jalen Wilson was going to be a lottery pick, he would not be on this team this year. Okay, I guarantee you that. Yeah. If Ochai Agbaji was a lottery pick, he would have not been on the team last year. Okay, if Brandon Rush doesn't tear his ACL, Kansas may not win a title in 2008, and Brandon Rush is not coming back to KU. He was going pro.
Yeah.
So you strike when the iron is hot, and the only thing that maybe would keep you from going pro is if you deep down know mentally, maturity-wise, you're not ready. Like, if Grady Dick is super immature and acts like he's 12 all the time, yeah, probably he's still going to have his millions of dollars, but he'll probably blow it so quickly it'll make your head spin. So that's another dynamic to it. But Grady Dick's not a stupid kid, okay? His family's very smart. And so Grady Dick, more than likely, based on the mock draft stuff, and we don't know this for sure. He could go to the combine. He could go do the testing and everything else, and he may absolutely not do well, and he may come back. But it's like John Calipari said in the One and Done documentary, and Bill Self's told his players this before. He's like, listen, if you're a lottery pick, you probably should go.
Yeah, I can tell
you. No matter what your age is, you should go take the money. Because if Grady Dick comes back to KU, and in week one of the non-con tears his ACL, or falls and breaks his leg, or fractures his ankle, or breaks his hand, you know, that changes everything for him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, you don't need it. Grady Dick doesn't KU to be there for 4 years. He needs to do what's best for him. As KU helped give him that platform for more people to see him, yes, but I will tell you, he could play at another institution and he'd still be seen. The NBA sees everybody. They know everybody, but it's not very often you got a 6'8 shooting guard who can catch and release so quickly, who can play above the rim that Jalen Wilson does not, and that's a big reason why Wilson is low in the first round on mock drafts, some second round, and Grady Dick is lottery pick top 10 according to mock drafts. And by the way, who's going to get more college accolades this year? Jalen Wilson.
Yeah.
He's going to be
All-American,
maybe Big 12 Player of the Year. Grady Dick will get Freshman of the Year in the Big 12, and yet guess who's going to have the best, is going to get the bigger, best contract on draft day if they both go pro, which Wilson has to. It'd be Grady Dick.
Yeah.
So Tell me again, everyone out there, please call me and tell me why you would turn down millions of dollars. Like the whole, well, you got to go get your education. I hear that one too. You got to get your education. Well, hell, you can get your education while you're going to the NBA, or you can go do the NBA, come back and get your degree. Isn't the whole goal, I know for me, the whole reason I went to college was to study, to be good, to where I could get a job in a profession and in an industry that I wanted to, right?
Yeah.
That's the reason I go to college. If I go to college for 1 year and somebody says, hey, Wade, you want to be a computer programmer, I got $100,000 for you to start right now and skip your next 3 years of college. You don't think I'm going to consider that?
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Hey, Wade, I got $1 million job for you to be an athletic trainer. Oh, yeah. You mean I don't have to go to college the next 3 years? Well, shoot, yeah. Where do I sign up? I mean, that's the same thing with a lot of these kids. I mean, they're 18, 19. Hopefully, they got good people guiding them. And they say, hey, you know, this is the right move for you. Like I said, only Grady Dick fully knows if he's mature enough to handle it. If Grady Dick says, I'm having too much fun in college, I need to come back, and I'm willing to roll the dice that, you know, maybe I fall draft stock, but he's so confident in his abilities that he thinks he can be even better next year. But losing just a year of the development in NBA, the NBA is thinking, I've got these guys when they're 18, 19, I got more time to mold them to what I want instead of them playing in college for another year. So I understand both sides of the coin, but please, ladies and gentlemen, before you just immediately knee-jerk reactionally say, oh, geez, Grady, he's a freshman. I mean, he only scored 4 points last night and didn't hit a shot from the floor. How can he go pro? It ain't about what he did last night. It's about the potential.
I'm not going to act like I'm fully on the inside here, but I can tell you that Grady Dick is not one of those guys that needs the money to help his family out.
Yes.
Grady Dick is the quintessential Bob Huggins quote of you go to college to get a job.
Uh-huh. That's right.
He leaves, go to college, get your job.
That's your point.
I know almost for a fact that they're doing fine financially, right?
Yeah, like, and by the way, I never said they aren't.
No, but I'm giving the example of a kid sometimes that needs that money, right, to
and
help the family out, and that's
go.
Why you leave,
yeah,
right? And I don't think that's at all the case with Grady Dick. The case with Grady Dick is he's so good that he's a lottery pick, and it's like, this is my time. My time is now. I wanted to be an NBA basketball player growing up. My time is now,
yes.
And I'm headed out. If I'm a lottery pick, there's no reason for me to stay here.
No. Nope.
We'll see you later.
And I think that's what's going to happen. That's what I think is going to happen. So, not a senior night, but that might have been the last home game for Grady Dick as well. And like Dusty said, I don't think any of us anticipate Grady Dick to be good enough this year as a freshman to be a one-and-done player, but that's what it appears to be. And KU now 25-5 on the season, 13-4, clinched a share of the Big 12 title, 17 Big 12 title in 20 seasons for Bill Self, which is absolutely insane. We'll talk some K-State basketball coming up in a little bit with K-State in focus, but first, we want to get the local sports where we had some high school basketball last night.
Here comes Moore ahead to Haxton. Blitz got to get back defensively. Haxton steps through. Eurostep. Great pass underneath. And Beisner comes out of nowhere and rejects it out of bounds into the Cardinal bench.
That was an impressive block by Bryce Beisner. He had 3 block shots, 7 rebounds, 22 points. He was our SNS Drug and Home Health Athlete of the Game. And he also had the block of the game for HR and Block and Bloit. Never settle for less. That was that block. You might as well just rename the block of the game. H&R Block, Bryce Beisner, block of the game, at least from a Bloit perspective, as Bloit moving on.
Now Tarleton launches the three. It's short. Rebounded by Abe Staples. And that will do it. The Beloit Trojan boys improve their record to 16-5. They move on to the 3A Substate Semifinals, where they'll take on Norton on Friday. Your final score, Beloit 74, Hoisington 40.
I didn't think Beloit would beat Hoisington by 32 back on January 6th. I never thought they'd beat Hoisington by 34 last night. It's just a really, really bad matchup for Hoisington because they don't have size. Their tallest player, 6'1". And I knew somebody would call me, which is really important, and they would call me when I'm on the air. I knew that was going to happen, so I'm going to have to, unfortunately, call him back. So they just don't have size. Their tallest player is their point guard at 6'1". It's just not a good matchup for Hoisington, and Beloit exploited that. But Beisner had a big night. Beloit was 1 point away from having 5 starters, all 5 in double figures last night. Quinn Eilert with 12 points. You were talking about, you know, points aren't everything, and it's very true. Like with Quinn last night, the final stats, he had 8 assists and 7 rebounds.
Nice.
That's pretty nice. And in 12 points, that's a really good line right there. You know, we talk about Bryce has some lines sometimes, 22 points, 11 rebounds, 8 block shots. Quinn had a really nice line last night and hit a couple of threes early to get Beloit going. Wyatt Brockman, a couple of threes early to get going. Eli Johnson. So Quinn ended up with 12. And then Eli Johnson had 10, 8 in the first half. Noah Gerstner had 10. He didn't attempt a shot in the first half. He didn't force it, to his credit. And then in the third quarter, he hit the first shot of the second half on a set play. It was kind of option number two, it looked like. Nice skip pass for an assist for Quinn Eiler. To Gerstner for a three. They got him going. He only took three shots, made all three threes. Beloit as a team was 10 of 17 from three, 59%. Wow. I mean, that's and so you got the inside game. They couldn't stop with Beisner, and Johnson got going early. And then you get Brockman and Gerstner and Eiler hitting threes. And dear Lord, that makes it tough to beat Beloit. And last night, Hoisington had no chance because of all that. And they played man-to-man. They played a little 2-3, a little matchup zone at times. They collapsed inside. They tried to stay with some of the three-point shooters. But Beloit's just so balanced. So last night, they had 22 from Beisner, 12 from Eiler. They had 10 from Johnson, 10 from Gerstner, 9 from Brockman. You had one more point where they had five in double figures. Brockman hit three triples. Gerstner hit three trays. Eiler hit two. Jarek Rexroth hit one coming off the bench in the fourth quarter. Lance Lundin hit one in the third quarter. It was a fairly tight game there for a while, but it was up four in the second quarter. They're down 2-0, scored 10 in a row, went up 10-2, up 21-17 in the second, led by 10 at halftime. Third quarter, Beloit just blew the doors off the building, 25-6. And it was the two catalysts was Beisner and Gerstner offensively, as Beisner had 8 points. And then when he wasn't scoring inside, Gerstner hit a couple of three-pointers. Then Lundin struck with a three-pointer. Then Brockman with a three-pointer. And as I talked about with Quinn, you know, 12 points, seven rebounds, eight assists. I mean, that's a terrific stat line as well. And there's other kids that we've seen in other games that might not have a great stat line. I know, I think Brockman and Gerstner have had a couple nights where they'll have, like, maybe they have 7-6 points, but they have 5 steals and 5 assists and 1 turnover. And so, like I said, they're in, or sometimes you'll have Johnson and Beisner have a double-double. You know, it's just interesting and fun to watch them because there's not, you know, I wouldn't say they have a star player. I mean, Bryce gets many accolades, as he should, because he's an outstanding player. But there's no doubt that Beloit has, you know, multiple kids that you can consider for all-league first team and honorable mention and all that as well. And their bench, they use their bench sparingly here and there. They sprinkle it in where they can to buy some minutes. Brady Litt and Lance Lundin coming off the bench have normally been the top two subs. But this is a team that's so balanced, and it's harder to defend a team that's balanced compared to a team that has one guy. And listen, Ellsworth last night lost 42-36 to Russell, and they have a kid averaging 23 a game, and they're right. Done. But the reason they're done is because they don't have enough help around this kid who is sensational in Will Cravens. They just don't have enough help offensively, whereas if Bryce has an off night or they take Bryce away, Beloit usually is capable of having other guys score. There's nights where, you know, there's a night when Brockman's not hitting. Okay, Gerstner's hitting three-pointers. There's a night Gerstner's not hitting three-pointers, and then Wyatt and Quinn are making three-pointers. And then there's a night where Quinn has a rough game offensively, but then Eli Johnson comes up with 10 and Brody Litton comes up with 8 off the bench. And so it's just it's tough to defend them when they're shooting the ball well like they were last night. Inside and outside, dear Lord, it's over. And last night, they shot the ball extremely well and go on to win it. The Cunningham telephone cable connections of the game were the 10 threes. I mentioned the block of the game and the athlete of the game already. Both of those go to Bryce Beisner as the Beloit boys win 74-40. They're 16-5 overall. They've won 5 in a row. Started your 0-3. It's not how you start, folks. It's how you finish. They have now won 16 of their last 18, and they beat Hoisington by 30-plus for the second time in the last few months, which is pretty impressive because Hoisington is a team that had a winning record coming in 11-9, had won 5 in a row, and Beloit destroyed them in the second half. So Beloit will move on to the Sub-State semifinals. They will play Norton on Friday at 6 o'clock right here on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com, and also the live video stream, we believe, at NCKSSports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. And Norton is 14-7 as they won a low-scoring game against Smoky Valley, 43-33. I mentioned Russell ended Ellsworth's season, 42-36. So Russell will play at home on Friday at 7:30 against the number one seed, the number two team in the state in 3A Southeast Saline, who crushed Phillipsburg last night, 77-48. Southeast Saline, they are 20-1. They only lost to a 4A in Hugoton. So that's the matchup coming up on Friday. Thursday, the Phillipsburg girls will play Norton, and then it'll be Southeast Saline girls playing Hoisington, and the other semifinal coming up tomorrow night in Russell. So once again, your boys' semifinals, 6 o'clock, Beloit and Norton. And then 7:30 on Friday, it's Southeast Saline versus Russell. 2A Ellis Substate Girls play Smith Center Manhandles, or Woman Handles, whatever you want to say. Plainville, 75-20. Miley Raby, 19 points, 4 threes. Gracie Kirkhoff, 13. Dakota Kattenberg with 12. Atwood chipped in with 11. TMP beats Rollins County, 52-40. So Smith Center and TMP will battle it out on Friday. Battle of League Schools there in the Substate semifinals in Ellis. Hoxie knocks off Hill City, 56-21, also in that substate. And Trigo beats Ellis in overtime, 45-40. Dusty and I are Trigo grads. Ellis was one of our main rivals. And I say, well, bravo, Golden Eagles, for beating Ellis last night in girls basketball in overtime. Other 3A boys games to tell you about. Marysville Substate, Nemos Central wins at Concordia, 55-48. Concordia done for the year. Sabetha boys, number one seed, blows out Minneapolis, 8 seed, 65-35. That was a long road trip from Minneapolis to Sabetha. 2A girls, Republic County season comes in. They lose to Riverside, 61-38. 2A girls, Sacred Heart stays alive. They win over El Saline, 51-38. Sacred Heart will take on Hillsboro, the number one seed, on Friday in the 2A girls substate semifinals. And once again, that is on Friday. We have locker room chats coming up today on the radio here on this Wednesday. We'll talk to the girls and boys coaches of Beloit, Osmer, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge. And then tomorrow night at 5:15, St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas. And our final wrestling locker room chats were yesterday with Beloit, Osmer, and Smith Center wrestling coaches to wrap up the season after state. And you can go back and check those out on our podcast page on our website, katycountry94.com. So here is our broadcast schedule as it sits now. Depending on weather and if our antenna freezes up on Z96.3 the lake, who knows there. So Thursday, tomorrow, the plan is Osborne Rock Hills girls substate semifinal, Washington County, on KD Country 94 and katycountry94.com. And then 1A substate girls semifinal, St. John's Tipton versus Tescott at 7:30 tomorrow night on Z96.3 The Lake and KDCountry94.com. On Friday, the plan is, as of now, Beloit versus Norton, 3A boys substate semifinal. That will be from Russell on KDCountry94 and KDCountry94.com, as I mentioned, live video stream. 1A substate boys semifinal, 6 o'clock Osborne against Blue Valley Randolph, followed by Lakeside versus Clifton Clyde. Both those games on Z96.3 The Lake. And the nightcap on Friday on KDCountry94, the plan is to have St. John's Tipton boys against Thunder Ridge from Tescott at 7:30. It's possible we have to join that one in progress. Possible, because I'll have the Beloit Norton game at 6, and then we'll throw it to the St. John's Tipton Thunder Ridge game at 7:30 on KDCountry94. As for Saturday, we don't know, obviously. Can't predict the future. Depends on what happens tomorrow and Friday, but we hope to have at least a few 1A and 3A substate. Well, we hope to have one 3A, because that's all we got left there. I hope to have a few 1A substate girls and boys championship games for you on the radio coming up on Saturday, March the 4th. And of course, if any of our area teams make it to state, we will do our best to cover them at state locations coming up next Wednesday, Thursday, and hopefully Friday and Saturday with girls and boys play. So it is almost over when it comes to winter sports. Of course, wrestling in the books with 5 area champions. You can read all about that at nckssports.com. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Well, the K-State men's basketball team, they're having their senior night this evening at 7 o'clock on ESPN+. They host Oklahoma. The Wildcats look to avenge a loss at Norman earlier this year. K-State 22-7, 10-6 in the Big 12. OU coming off here recently, a win on the road at Iowa State. And OU at the bottom of the conference standings, 14-15 overall, 4-12 in the Big 12. Jerome Tang on senior night and all the emotions involved with it.
I don't know. It's my first time. And senior nights have always been emotional because we were blessed for a long time to be able to bring in young guys and then have them for 5 years at Baylor, you know, and just see the maturity and all of that. And of recent, there's been, you know, transfers, and so you don't have them for as long, but it doesn't mean that you don't have a heart connection, you know. And so, yeah, last game in Bramlage for the year. You know, I mean, it's going to be special.
Well, I expect K-State to play well tonight. They did not play well at Norman, and Jerome Tang even mentioned that they might have been tired in that game for some reason. So you expect K-State to bounce back and win that one. Then they go to Morgantown coming up on Saturday. K-State has a chance to finish 12-6 in the Big 12. Who would have thought that before the season? Raise your hand. Ah, no hands are going up.
None of us are doing that.
No. What is it, the fourth straight head coach at K-State, first year's won 20 games?
That makes sense.
Huggins, Martin, Weber, and Tang.
Yeah.
20 wins in their first year.
Yeah, because Huggy was definitely, he was in the low 20s, but he definitely hit 20.
He hit 20, yeah.
So, and we know that Bruce Weber won the share of the Big 12 championship his first year, so he had to have won 20.
Right. Exactly. So that's pretty impressive, too. So K-State and Oklahoma tonight at 7 o'clock on ESPN+. And the K-State women play at 6 o'clock tonight on ESPN+, at number 16, Oklahoma. And KU women, looks like they'll probably make the tournament, but they can't afford to play badly at the end. They are hosting Iowa State, who's number 23, and that'll tip at 7 o'clock on ESPN+, from Allen Fieldhouse. Anything you want to add about K-State men's basketball?
No, I'm just interested to see how it goes tonight with senior night, and you hope that they come out with the focus for them and can play well. And I have not heard if any of those guys are thinking about coming back if they have eligibility. It doesn't sound like it right now, so I don't know. Maybe some of them will come back, but you know Keontae and Marquise are done, and so that's going to be interesting tonight. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how they come out with their final home game tonight, trying to protect Bramlage Coliseum Court. They've only lost at home once this year, which is, you're moving back in the right direction toward doom, but you're still not there. But I still don't like it, but it's still all over the place. And it's back with a vengeance right now because the coach is promoting it.
Listen, to me, it's the octagon of doom when you only lose one game every year at home or zero.
Yeah.
One or zero.
If they can do what they did this year and do it for 3-4 years in a row,
then I'll
buy into it for sure.
I agree.
But you know, get the kids there, and I know it'll be a packed house tonight. There's no question about that.
K-State baseball team started year 4-0, but now they lost 5 in a row as they had a 4-game sweep over Stephen F. Austin start the year, then lost at Lamar. And then they played number one LSU on this past Friday, lost 7-3 in the tournament down Round Rock, Texas. And then they lost to Sam Houston 8-3, and then lost a tough one to Iowa on Sunday 6-5. Then lost at Omaha yesterday 7-6. So after a pretty decent start and playing pretty well against number one team in the country, they haven't won a game since. They're now 4-5.
So. Yeah, we'll see. Let's see if they can get anything going at all this year.
Our focus on K-State Athletics today is brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. NBA notes. The Bucks did not lose in the month of February. 15-0.
I didn't realize they were.
Take that 8-day stretch off. You know, that makes less games for you. That's
true.
Sure.
True.
Still impressive. That is still very impressive.
Still impressive. You win 15 in a row at the pro level, and they had one of those wins against the Celtics, so they're shorthanded. 15 in a row. They beat the Nets last night, 118-104. It's the league's longest winning streak of the season, and a perfect month of February. The Bucks are now 44-17. They have the best record in the NBA. Now, I don't remember what you guys picked for the NBA Finals, but I had Bucks and Grizzlies, so I'm feeling pretty good about the Bucks. The Nuggets are doing really well in the West, but until you see the Nuggets do it, and the Grizzlies, to a little bit of extent, Grizzlies are still very young, but the Nuggets, if Jamal Murray doesn't get hurt, who knows what would happen last year and a half, but... who did you have?
I had the Nuggets winning it.
Yeah, the Nuggets winning it over the Celtics.
I think the Celtics. I don't remember.
Yeah, that one looks pretty solid too. Jason, you remember who you picked in NBA Finals?
It was either the Bucks or Celtics on the East, and then
didn't you have the Warriors in the West?
I think I had the Warriors.
I think
in
you
the
did.
West.
Yeah. Well, it's what you never know. If you get Curry back, everybody gets healthy. The Warriors can make a run. Much like the Houston Rockets back when they went back-to-back, they were a sixth seed. They didn't even care about home court. Right. They knew they would get healthy. They'd be ready to go. And break up the Royals, man. They are just unbeatable right now. They got beat once. They're 4-1. They beat the Guardians 12-6. Vinny Pascatino with a two-run single, one of the key blows in the game yesterday, as the Royals win 12-6 over the Guardians. They play the Rockies today. Really, I'm not even interested in any stats with the Royals per se. The only stat I'm worried about, not necessarily worried about, but just like the number that I want to look at, how long was the game? I'm just like, you know, I'm fascinated by how long is the game. There is a video. There are two videos next to each other that's been posted on Twitter. And granted, they found a long, like, extreme example of I think it was a playoff game either last year or the year before, where it took forever for a guy to throw a pitch. He stepped off, looked at the runner at second like two times. The batter got in. He stepped out. Pitcher stepped off the rubber. Anyway, it was 2 minutes of no action. There was 2 minutes. It was a minute 51, and there was not a single pitch. I think they threw the right when they threw the pitch, they started the clock. And then they went to a spring training game this year, and there were six pitches thrown and one out recorded in the span, same span with the pitch clock, compared to no pitch clock in a playoff game. That is probably an extreme example. And also, there was nobody on base in the spring training game, so it wasn't the fairest example, but it does stress the point that the game was so slow that you had one pitch in 2 minutes, whereas now you have a 15-second pitch clock. There should be four pitches in 1 minute. How do we multiply that? That you get four times as much action, technically, now with the pitch clock.
Yeah.
Isn't that something compared to that example?
Yeah, it's... And I hope that they are firm on all this and just keep going when you hit the postseason, World Series, everything, right? We've got to stay...
Keep it.
...firm on it.
Yeah.
...to make it work.
I'm with you. I'm okay if they occasionally start the clock just a second late.
Well, yeah.
Don't want this, oh, yeah, like Jason said, well, I can give them a warning in the postseason. No. Like you said, be firm. And I think that's what their plan is.
Because they've
been firm from the very beginning. The fact that you end the game on a, hey, you weren't in the box in time in the bottom of the ninth inning, means that the umpires have been strictly... told, this is how we do it, guys. We are going to break these players. It's like breaking horses, right? Where we're going to break these players and these managers and these batters and these pitchers, and we're going to break them of doing the shift, and we're going to break them of taking forever on the mound, stepping off the rubber six times. We're going to stop them from throwing to first base five times. We're not even trying to pick somebody off. We're going to stop them from getting in the box, stepping out, rewiring their gloves, even though they're already Velcroed on and are fine, like Lorenzo Cain. And I love Lorenzo Cain, like I said, but it was ridiculous. I was like, dear God, you don't have to do this every single time. But whatever. They allowed you to do it. And so now here we are. So I love it. I like it. I want some more of it, as Tim McGraw would sing. And so I think it's good for baseball. I know there are traditionalists that don't like it. But when you just look at that one example, six pitches in the span of one pitch, old versus new, with and without a true pitch timer that's being enforced, I think that's moving in the right direction. Is it a little bit too quick? I don't think it is for the fans that want to enjoy a game in 2.5 hours. It might be a little bit too quick, possibly, for the pitchers and the hitters. Like, I still think maybe you could have gone 20 seconds with the pitch clock instead of 15, and then 25, or just keep it 20 with the base runner. 15 is fairly quick. But I will tell you right now, we're having games in spring training where there's all kinds of runs, there's a whole bunch of hits, and these games are getting over in 2 minutes, 2 hours, in 2 minutes, that'd be insane, 2 hours, 29 minutes, 2 hours, 18 minutes, 2 hours, 38 minutes. That beats 3 hours and 47 minutes for a nine-inning game.
Yes, yes. And
hallelujah.
I think the real hope is in a year or two to really get them in the habit. And then, you know, they've also done this in the minors. So then eventually you just don't even need the clock. It's just one of those things.
You just be so used to it.
Yeah. And then if some one little thing goes wrong and we have, you know, a couple of pitches here and there that take a little bit longer, then so be it. But, yeah, I think that's the plan, is to try to just get them in the habit and go from there. And overall, it should work. I mean, I don't see why it won't.
Well, one thing that is refreshing to me is that the players, we don't hear the managers or players whining and complaining about very much. Like, they've accepted it. Like, well, these are the rules. and we just have to adjust. And you know what? You had to adjust, or if you didn't adjust, you hit into the shift all the time. Mm-hmm. If you didn't hit into the shift, then you were getting, your batting average went up because you hit the ball the other way. You have to adjust. I mean, you have to adjust to faster runners when they get on base compared to slower runners. You have to adjust to a guy that can hit a high fastball compared to a guy, you know, a hitter's always got to adjust. All you got to do is think of Serrano from Major League. I got to hit the curveball. You know, you got to adjust. They throw you a whole bunch of junk instead of fastballs. You've got to adjust. Baseball is all about adjusting. And now you've got set rules that are the whole key to rules, though. Rules don't mean jack squat if they're not enforced. Like I said, if you have no cops anywhere on the highways, do you think people abide the speed limit? Well, they don't now anyway. But do you think they're, I mean, the threat of an officer, a cop, a trooper being on the highway, or a cop being in town, that just the threat of them being around every once in a while, or in some cases I see them all the time, which is fine, that helps enforce the rules. But rules, they say, what's that saying? Rules are meant to be broken. Right. Well, yeah, they're always broken. Sometimes people don't know that they were broken because the law didn't see that you broke a rule. So does that mean you didn't break a rule? No, you did, but you didn't get caught. But the point that I'm trying to make is rules are great in theory. Strategies are great in theory, but you have to execute them, or you need to enforce the rules or execute a strategy. And if you have this great strategy going to a ball game and it doesn't work right off the bat, it meant nothing. Or if your kids don't execute the strategy, it means nothing. It seems great on paper, and it looks great on paper. Ooh, we got a pitch clock and we got this. But if they were loose with this, then guess what? It wouldn't work. So they have to be strict to it. Like, how many times have we seen the NFL year in and year out? And we're seeing it in basketball. There's always this emphasis every year. All right, less physical play in the post, and we're going to call the hand checks, and we're going to go this. And by the end of the year, it's just like, hey, we're going to call the high strike. At the end of the year, umpires are like back to their regular strike zone. Yeah. Whereas this is a little bit more clear cut. We actually have a clock that we can see, although I don't think we're going to see it during the big league season behind the plate as you're seeing in spring training. Although I think for TV, they will have a little thing that'll keep. Guess what? TV execs are going to hire a whole nother person just to run the pitch clock, because that's a constant job. Think about that for a second. You know, you need to see the pitch clock. There's some people that are annoyed by the play clock being shown all the time in football games. I don't have a big problem with it, except to me, don't show the play clock until it gets to 10 or 5, then pop it up there, okay? But that's fine, whatever. At least at home, I know where the play clock is. Like, oh my God, come on, Andy, get the play in. We're going to get delay a game. Oh no, Bill Snyder, once again, the play clock, he's going to have to call a timeout to start the second half, and they just came out. How did they not know what they wanted to run? So forth and so on. But the pitch clock has to be on the score bug somewhere for baseball this year, because it will not be on a clock right behind home plate like it is right now in spring training.
And see, that was
But doesn't it need to be somewhere, though, for the pitcher so he knows?
I think so. I saw a lot of things that said it's kind of be off on the side, like where the on deck hitters,
which is kind of what
be.
It is right now. Yeah. But they said it wasn't going to be. I read the other day that said it's not going to be that prevalent as it is now.
Right. That was one of my concerns, was the equivalent of the NFL play where the clock is going down, mm-hmm. and sometimes it hits zero, but it seems like they get that extra second.
Yes.
Like, are we going to be doing a lot of hand-wringing over this, like where, all right, the pitcher's in his motion.
At home. That pitch didn't count.
Yeah, the pitcher's in his motion. Are they going to let that go, or does it have to be out of his hand, or what is the actual line there?
Yes.
And so I don't want that. See, I could do without the play clock on the screen, because it kind of like, well, that's
don't you want to know when it's ticking down when you're watching your team,
I guess,
to know that they don't have time to audible.
If the announcer says there's five on the play clock,
no, I don't want to rely on the announcer. The announcer has enough stuff to cover than to worry about a play clock.
But I would believe them if they just threw the flag for a delay. I'm like,
believe them?
Yeah. Well, the officials are the one that throw the flags. I would believe them that there's a.
Do you believe them when they call pass interference and there's not pass interference against the Huskers?
There's never been.
There we go. Huskers, right? There's the real back.
Yeah, that is the.
Jason is backpedaling as we speak.
Yes. No, it's just.
I'll just believe the officials. They're so good at what they do.
I mean, with delay of game, it's just that weird half second that you get where you know, the clock technically says zero, but then they explain it like, well, they got to look. See
it takes
the
a second
this.
To see it from the umpire.
Yeah, and then they look at the ball. And then, so yeah, that's my only concern with the pitch clock is, are we going to be doing that with, is he two-thirds of the way in his motion, and are we just going to let that go? Or I don't know what the actual line is, and so I don't want that every pitch. But
is he fully in the box, ready to hit or not? That type of thing. Yeah, and that's where even when you have like clear rules, you think there's still just a little bit of judgment involved.
Right,
there's always some kind of judgment involved with most of the rules. Yeah,
but
that you think about.
But that's what this is. That's what spring training's for.
Yeah,
and so they'll get it worked out. I'm just. You know, maybe the first couple of weeks of baseball is a little weird, but that's all right.
Hey, maybe this pitch clock thing will actually allow players like Bobby Witt Jr. to not have to sit a Sunday afternoon game with an off day coming up because they're on the field less because the games are shorter.
There you go. Not out in 90.
Connect the dots right there, maybe. I think that'd be cool.
That probably is a long-term type of...
I think it is. I don't know if the baseball's smart enough to figure that out. I think they're still going to be like, well, we rest our guy when we rest our guy, whatever. By the way, the NBA thing we talked about yesterday real quick, we talked about how the NBA is discussing an Elam ending for overtime after the double overtime thriller that everybody loved between the Clippers and the Kings, and the NBA is like, well, we'll just give the fans the opposite of what they like. But, you know, if you really want to solve the problem of the broadcast being a little bit too long for the NBA broadcast, I've got a few solutions I came up with here. One, you shorten the commercial breaks and charge more for the commercials. That's on the TV networks, which that won't happen. You know that. Two, just have the Elam ending in the fourth quarter and don't have overtime ever. There is no overtime anymore in the NBA. It's been abolished because you go to the Elam ending. You mentioned that yesterday. Or three, I know this sounds crazy, shorten the season. 82 games is too many anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shorten it to 60, 70, 65, whatever arbitrary number you want to come up with. 69, 67, 63, 58. I don't care. Come up with one. 50. Agree on a number. And there you can, then you can just not worry about all this minute restriction stuff as much. Of course, that's a pipe dream because the NBA owners want their money and they want their more games on TV, which helps with the TV contracts. So my solutions that I just gave you have no chance of ever, ever being enforced and happening, except for possibly the Elam ending in the fourth quarter. I think that is possible. I think the NBA, like a lot of organizations, You kind of throw out the carrot a little bit, and you test it a little bit. And to me, that's what they eventually want to get to. I think they eventually want to get to, we don't have overtime.
Mm-hmm.
So then we know that no player is going to play more than 48 minutes on any given night. I think that's what they're going for. And I think they know that if they just immediately do the Elam ending in the fourth quarter and eliminate overtime right away, the fans will be really, really upset. So let's just go ahead and alienate them with this idea. And then once fans come around to, okay, I guess that's all right, then we'll hit them with the, there's no more overtimes. Because, you know, we want them to make more money per minute they play than they are currently. I should take the number and divide it by how many minutes Kawhi Leonard's played so far with the Clippers, how much money he's made so far, and figure out how much money he makes per minute on the floor. I think it would blow your mind.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, what any player with a contract like Kawhi Leonard has is going to make per minute, and then add to the fact that he's taking off every sixth day.
Yeah.
It's even more insane.
It's not sixth day, it's sixth game, because they don't play six games in a row.
Yeah.
You don't even play back-to-backs, as we looked it up yesterday. So, yeah. So there's a few other. Yeah, you got another solution, an idea for the NBA, besides the, or instead of Elam ending for overtime? Which, you know, is a drastic major problem in the NBA. That's what cracks me up. It's like, this is not a major problem. Major League Baseball, nine-inning games going 4 hours is a problem. The NBA, I don't hear tons of people complaining about the NBA games are too long.
No, I don't.
And if they are, then, you know, oh, here's the other solution I forgot to mention. Eliminate replay or put a clock on how long you get to look at the replay. Now, NBA, I will say, many times I've watched this year, they have come up with a conclusion on the replay fairly quickly. Now, last year, it seems like they are getting better.
At the end
of
some of those playoff games last year,
there's just too many reviews.
Oh, my goodness.
There's just too many. Like, well, under 2 minutes, let's go check every single time the ball was tipped out of bounds. We got to go look at it every single time. Like, there's no rhythm to the game at all.
It's just like,
And that takes the broadcast to go long.
I'd be real frustrated as a player during all that. It's like, yeah, I want the call to be right, but man, I want to stay in rhythm here. I want to stay in the in the moment that is so critical right now. That's why we're looking at these plays.
Absolutely.
Because we're in critical moments, and now you've like paused for 2 minutes, 3 minutes sometimes just to look at one tip.
Yeah.
It's like, make your decision. Let's play ball.
It's too much. So there's some ideas. I'm sure the NBA is listening to us, and they will take that into consideration.
Yeah, I mean, if Patrick Mahomes listens to the show, I'm sure the NBA does as well.
That's still wild that happened a few hours. I brought up and said, why isn't Patrick Mahomes talking about Eric Bieniemy and supporting him? And then Bieniemy has a little video. They were asking him about some of that stuff, and then boom. It was like Mahomes was waiting for some video of Bieniemy before he could actually comment. We were joking, all of us, that Patrick Mahomes listens to the Sports Ticket. So, Patrick, if you're out there, we love you. We hope that you're resting up and let's go back to back. All right, let's make it happen. All right, and if you want to send me a personalized autographed football or sweatshirt or jersey, you don't have to, Patrick. You don't have to, but if you want to, we won't stop you.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.